Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol, Hari Bol. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Vitale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nityanani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gaudavani Pracharine Nivishesha Sunyavari Vastu Vastakarani. So I was originally planning on doing a presentation on artificial intelligence. How about that? That's pretty ambitious. So I went to Wikipedia and I looked it up, and there was no end to it. I could still be reading it even through to today and even up to now and still not finish it. The article went on and on and on. And as it went on, it became more and more abstruse, arcane, and abstract. At least for me. So I kind of gave up on that. That doesn't mean I won't say anything about artificial intelligence, but I have to have that disclaimer that I really know that much about it. I really don't. It's extremely complex and there's all kinds of problems. But I will, from a philosophical point of view, we can say a few things about it. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjanasya. I can mention, please tolerate that I do some reading, but the reading that I'm doing, I wrote. So you're getting something tailor-made for you. Okay, is that all right? Do I have your blessings? I can read a little bit. And I can't help it. I'm from New York, and my style is to also quote a shloka and tell a joke, and so there'll be some impromptu aspect. But I also, I don't know, I like to write and read. Awesome. I can mention at the outset that artificial intelligence, AI, in its broader sense, is intelligence exhibited by machines, particularly computer systems. It has deeply permeated today's world that many are concerned of the danger of its getting out of control, of its potential misuse by bad actors, quote unquote, etc. I can also point out that AI has a long history, beginning with Alan Turing, his work back in the 1950s. For our purposes, there is a fertile area of inquiry regarding the comparison between artificial intelligence and natural intelligence. But alas, yesterday was the first time I ever did any research on the nature of the beast. When I looked at the pertinent article, and I already told you, it was very intimidating for me. Now, why did I choose this complicated and rather mysterious topic? Okay, I did so because it is, well, it's out there and seemed relevant for most of today's audience or audiences as this class gets broadcast to YouTube and who knows where else. So time permitting, I will actually make a comment of AI at the conclusion of this presentation. So let's focus on regular natural intelligence, buddhi. This will save me from drowning as a result of getting into an area way over my head. I trust I have your sympathy. So we'll be referring to some verses in Bhagavad Gita. I think they may be up there, some of them. So some foundational teachings from Lord Sri Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna describes material energy and spiritual energy. And we're spiritual energy, we're also marginal energy. And that's especially in chapter 7. But in chapter 7 also, you go to the fourth verse of the chapter, Bumir apo nalovayu kammano budere vacha ahankara ityame vina prakriti rashtada. His subtle material elements as found in nature, in other words, the intelligence is one of the material elements. It's one of the subtle material elements, mind, intelligence, and false ego. So that's our first introduction in Bhagavad Gita to the element known as intelligence. Then in Bhagavad Gita, 3rd chapter, 42nd verse, presents a hierarchy of faculties, with intelligence, buddhi, placed at the top of the totem pole, just below the transcendental spiritual level of soul. In other words, of all the material echelons, faculties of perception, so buddhi or intelligence is at the top of the list. We should control our lower self by the higher self. We're in the lower modes of material nature, our lower self is dominating us. And when we become gradually purified and we get to a certain level, then we have more of a tendency to rely on the higher self, which is guided by actual intelligence, buddhi. And this very process of bhakti yoga, is also known as buddhi yoga. And Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I give them that intelligence by which they can come to me. In the 10th chapter, he mentions that. So, just as with foods, one man's sabji is another man's poison. I altered that expression a little bit so it's more user-friendly for you. You know what it usually says. So in other words, intelligence, with so many other components of this world, works very differently according to the respective modes of material nature, which underlie it. So some of you, maybe not so much here, but out in cyberspace somewhere, may not be even familiar when I talk about modes. Goodness, passion, and ignorance, the material energy. Actually, even if one is not a convinced theist, even if one is still a, quote, non-believer, from Bhagavad Gita you get a very, very useful tool for how to deal with this material world. You know, I'm of this world. I'm not interested in next world or some other world, pie in the sky. I want to deal with, okay, you want to deal with this world, go to Bhagavad Gita, and you'll find detailed descriptions, especially in chapter 14, chapter 17, and chapter 18, analyzing the dynamic influences of the three modes of material nature. In other words, material energy works in three ways, in goodness, in passion, and in ignorance. And I don't have to unpack those terms because they're rather self-explanatory. So, intelligence, I hate to say it, but I don't hate to say it, I should love to say it because Krishna said it, intelligence is also impacted or influenced by modes of material nature. So it's not that you're dealing on the level of intelligence and you're home free or you're everything is safe and okay, because intelligence itself can be undermined by the lower modes of material nature. And I don't have time to explain for those who've never heard of this, but we're in a cosmic period called Kali Yuga, where the lower modes of passion and ignorance, goodness is hard to come by, and passion and ignorance are very prevalent, too much. So people have intelligence. Buddhi, intelligence, translated in what follows as understanding, In other words, in Bhagavad Gita, there's intelligence in the modes of nature described in chapter 18. And although it's described as understanding, but in the word for word in the last two verses, passion and ignorance verses, it's explained as the word used is actual more common translation or synonym for buddhi, which is intelligence. Otherwise, the first verse refers to understanding. It's the same difference. So, Krishna provides a crucial description of intelligence at Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 41. You have that verse up there? How does it start? Someone help me a little bit. You know that one. That the intelligence is either Eka Buddhi or Vyavasaya Buddhi. Intelligence is either single focus, single-minded intelligence, or many-branched. So we want that Eka Buddhi intelligence, Vyavasika Buddhi, not that Vyavasaya Buddhi, many-branched. So that's very interesting and very crucial why we're all sitting here today. One of the historical reasons why we even heard of Krishna, those coming from the West especially, and that we actually started chanting, most of us started chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Now the class was successful. how does that, what am I referring to? That Srila Prabhupada, as some of you are aware of, was especially inspired by the commentary of that Vyavasyatmika Buddhi verse by Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. And essentially, what he pointed out was the disciple should take the instruction of the guru, the spiritual master, as his life and soul. Should take it to heart, make it his life and soul, his only purpose in life is to fulfill the instruction of the spiritual master. So Srila Prabhupada, of course, had a very glorious, amazing spiritual master, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur Maharaj. And what did Srila Bhakti, give me two answers for this. What did Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, what did he instruct Srila Prabhupada? Go to the Western world, go to America, go to the Western world where the English is, so you speak very good English, so you go there and you preach this message in the Western world. What was the other instruction? If you ever get money, print books. And Krishna, although he held it back at the beginning, Krishna just gave all the money that Prabhupada needed. And Prabhupada emphasized the use of that money for book printing. And so a lot of what's going on in ISKCON, in the Hare Krishna movement, has a lot to do with, we give credit to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur for his commentary, and to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and of course we're eternally and unlimitedly indebted to our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada. So that's very, very, is a very historical aspect there. I'm mentioning that verse in the context of this talk because it also involves two types of intelligence. What are the two types of intelligence? One-pointed intelligence, single-minded, and the other is splayed out. And many of us experience that we're still affected by this Vyavasaya Buddhi, this We're using our intelligence to make this plan, to make that plan. And in the background, hopefully, we've gotten to a point, most of us, many of us, some of us, have gotten to a point where the purpose of our external activities is also bhakti, is also to please Krishna. But sometimes we tend to forget the ultimate purpose because we get very focused on the details. So our founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada took that commentary to heart. All right. Now we're going to get into some far out aspects. However, there is an example, there's a caveat. The caveat more or less refers to an exception. That one's intelligence can be very, very focused, but if the underlying mode is less than goodness, especially when ignorance and passion are impelling one's focused attention, the result can be very disastrous. I'll give an example, and unfortunately it's still a timely example. The Manhattan Project. You know about that. $1 billion was spent in money of that time. It was probably the world's best kept secret in the history of secrets. It was amazingly orchestrated and coordinated and calibrated, and you had a huge team of scientists working how to create an atomic bomb. And they were, quote, successful, unquote. In 1970 or so, I was in Worcester, Vermont, and there was a conference of guilty scientists. This is 1970 already, and they were lamenting that the community, the scientific community, ever did that. There was already the Cuban Missile Crisis occurred 5 years earlier. So, where are we? So the reason I'm mentioning that example is it's an example of how they had such focused attention. They had vyavasyaki ka buddhi, but it was focused on the wrong thing. Because even though they were focused, but they were undermined, they were compromised in their endeavor because of the influence of passion and ignorance. See how practical this Bhagavad Gita teaching is. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam, the next level of devotees' study. We have the verse right here. I have so many verses memorized, but I lost it. Yeah, okay. Anyway, someone want to, you want to read that, Fran?
Yeah, the brain.
Yeah, let's see for the other glasses, I can see. And I'm also at an angle here. No, I can't, you can read just the translation.
Doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension, memory, and sleep, as determined by their different functions, are said to be the distinct characteristics of intelligence.
Okay, more on intelligence. So far, we're still in the main topic of natural intelligence as opposed to artificial intelligence. Yeah. So that's a strange list when you look at it. You think intelligence is all going to be very positive and, you know, like really sharp, you know, nice understanding and abilities, but forgetfulness is also included. And sleep is also included. So that's that has to be unpacked, and it's unfortunately would take us way over time if I started getting into it. But there is an explanation how they all figure as parts of intelligence. Just one example is that, say, doubt. Doubt, generally, we hear in Bhagavad Gita, the demon of doubt, not only Madhusudana, but the demon of doubt, should be slain. Arjuna wants the demon of doubt to be slain. And it is also that 440 verse, agyas-ca-śraddha-dhanaśca samśayātva-vināśyati nayam-lakosti-nāparo nasukam samśayātmanaha, that doubtful and faithless persons, they don't make it. They never can achieve happiness. They can never achieve the destination. So doubt is deplorable, but it's part of intelligence. And then Prabhupada explains, at the beginning, doubt is very good. For instance, one of the reasons we even approached the Krishna consciousness movement at the beginning was maybe we had some doubt about, there was actually a group, there was all kinds of groups back in the 60s, and one group was called Who Am I? The Who Am I group. I mean, it's a very, very, you know, it's very much stifled and repressed by modern materialistic so-called scientific, sthitati muni, scientific paradigm. You don't want to get into any trouble with the professor. But it's very, very stifled, but still underlying it, there's always that kind of doubt that, who am I actually? I remember I came back from Israel. I was 1 year in Israel in 1963 and 1964. Yeah, I'm an old guy. And my father, I had gone one semester to Brooklyn College before, and then I was away for 1 year, and then I came back, my father kind of pushed this bulletin of Brooklyn College in my face. It's okay, now we're gonna get serious. Now you came back, now you're gonna go back to Brooklyn College and you're gonna become a doctor or a lawyer or what, you know, let's get serious now. And I said, in New York we say dad for father. And I said, dad, but I still don't know who I am. What's the use of becoming a lawyer if I don't know who I am? I wasn't really, I have to be very candid here. I don't want to pretend that I was already like really looking for self-realization, you know, in a transcendental way. But I was, you know, even materially speaking, I know there's some history in the early days in ISKCON, Satsbhut Maharaj was trying to figure out which self he should find. And devotees started laughing, and Prabhupada was kind of also a little amused by that, but then he told the devotees, no, he's very nice devotee, this Steve Guarino, he's a very nice devotee. Every day he brings me a mango. It cost $1 each, it's a lot in those days. So, I was also just looking for find my real false ego. There was actually an article, I don't want to go off the track too much, but there was an article in Back to Godhead magazine by one Mataji, and she was very astute in her observation. It says, searching for a real false ego. It's back a number of years. And it's kind of like materially, you know, like I think it was Chuparari Swami who pointed out that if you want to jump high in the air, it's good to have both feet on the ground. So, you know, we have to be grounded, you know, we have to know, materially speaking, you know, who am I, even in that sense. But maybe there was a touch of transcendence in my complaint to my father. And I went on to Brooklyn College, I became a philosophy major, but I was mostly a hippie major. That's another story. The next letter goes, all right, we got that. See separate printed page. To conclude our discussion of natural intelligence, as opposed to artificial, an epistemic issue emerges. Given the above-mentioned hierarchy of faculties, remember those that start off as sense objects, the senses, then the mind, and the intelligence, and finally the soul, Bhagavad Gita 3:42. Given that hierarchy, can intelligence be understood or analyzed by intelligence itself? That's the question. On the one hand, it seems unlikely without a higher vantage point. Like to understand the mind, it's hard to understand mind on the mental platform. What's the faculty we should utilize for understanding mind? Go up one level.
Intelligence.
So for understanding intelligence, that's the highest of the material faculties. Soul, we have to understand it from a transcendental point of view. Yet we do hear examples of a dairy in the form of yogurt curing excessive consumption of dairy in the form of milk. We do also have the example of a thorn being used to pick out a thorn. And more essentially, especially for us, how the same activities that entangled us in Maya can be performed to extricate us from such entanglement when those activities are performed to please Krishna. In other words, done for his purport, pleasure. Okay, so that was something I added on. So now here's the fun part. Without attempting to go into too much detail, we'll say something about artificial intelligence, at least from a philosophical perspective. And this is based on Vedic Vaishnav Siddhanta. And I'm writing notes, I always have VVS all over the place. Vedic Vaishnav Siddhanta, those who are not familiar, Vedic is the tradition coming from ultimately from beyond this world, the culture of India, we can say for now. And then Vedic Vaishnav means theistic understanding of the conclusion of the Vedas, that there is a personal God, theistic. And finally, of course, Krishna consciousness has been pointed out by a very elevated devotee, is the full-fledged theism. We go the whole nine yards with theism. Prabhupada would say, we can give you Krishna's address, his phone number, his address, and everything. I just remember not to forget, I after the class, as a reward for tolerating my philosophical speculations, I brought a small packet of beautiful laminations I had done in Colombia, in college. And there was one devotee, Alejandro, who said, it was a new coming to Krishna consciousness, and he had a printing business, so he printed out thousands of these. I still have a few, and I brought a few with me. If anyone's interested after the class, I'd be glad to give you one. It's a lifetime lamination, really is well done. I'm not selling them, Hare Krishna. The question, let's talk a little bit about artificial intelligence. A few general issues we could take up in this regard. The question of consciousness. Some AI, when I say AI, I mean artificial intelligence, some AI people ascribe consciousness to AI systems. But Vedic Vaishnav Siddhanta is very clear that without a person, without a spiritual entity, consciousness is never present anywhere, never mind how sophisticated a system may be. And I remember back in a long time ago, I asked my father, do you think computers could think? My father gave a very entertaining answer. He said, no, this is a good answer. He said, no, but in the future, the scientists are working on it. In the future, they will be able to think computers, dear old dad. Okay, so so without a person, there's no consciousness, there's no thought. Consciousness is never present anywhere. It's without a person, never mind how sophisticated a system may be. See, this man, Alan Turing, back in the 1950s, he established a criterion. Now, he's the originator of artificial intelligence. It goes back, all the way back to the 1950s. He called it machine intelligence. And he was presenting a criterion. I won't go into the detail, but there's a certain level of communication. If a computer can understand human speech, then he was proclaiming, so to speak, that means that they could think. That's thought. And there's a little background to this. I'm going to have to start going into some straight reading so I don't miss what I'm trying to get to here. All right, so we're talking about consciousness. The actual AI people, the AI people, they have discussions about whether the system becomes so sophisticated that it actually can think and it contains consciousness. But what I've read on it is they don't make an issue about it because obviously beyond their purview. But the very fact that they think it, AI may be conscious, that belies or it reveals a whole fault in Western philosophy for a number of centuries. In this regard, there was a picture in Origins magazine. Origins magazine only published one issue, but it's a beauty. It's really, really good. And I think I have a copy in what's left of my library. So in Origins magazine, they had this is a question, can computers think? So some of you may remember this image. They had a picture of a computer, and someone had a hammer, a good-sized hammer, and it was holding the hammer about to smash the computer. And then the computer had a little spring or something, and a little sign popped out of it saying, "Don't strike me, don't smash me," or something like that. So, hello, the computer could be programmed to do that. It doesn't mean the computer actually had the capacity to become afraid and don't hit me, but you can program it. That was back in 84. What to speak of nowadays, what you can do with computer programming, even up to artificial intelligence. So, that point was being made very clearly in that picture, in that almost like a cartoon. So it's a big mistake to think that because you could program computers to act as if they're thinking, doesn't mean they're actually thinking. Is that clear? No? Thank you. In somewhat recent philosophy, this gets a little thick here, so bear with me. If some of you like philosophy, you might be late to it, I don't know. Okay, this is a very rich story, very philosophically rich anecdote. A philosophically rich anecdote. Let's make it a new icon. What is it called? Okay. PRA. It's a PRA, a philosophically rich anecdote. I just invented something. So, 1965, I was a major in philosophy, although distracted. And my professor's name was Elmer Sprague. He was. He wrote this book, became well-known, a textbook for philosophy 1.1 called Knowledge and Values. And he was my professor. And at the very beginning of a class of metaphysics, he said that in this class, we will not allow any discussion of privileged access. Oh, really? That's pretty arbitrary, Professor Sprague. Now, at the time, I didn't know what he was referring to. I don't think anyone in the class had any idea what he meant by privilege. I was speculating. I thought it meant mystical, because, you know, I was in the 60s, you know, Om and all that, and a lot of mysticism going on, and then Hare Krishna came into the picture, you know. But Turning East, that was a book written by, what's his name? So, I was wrong. That's not what he was referring to. He wasn't talking about privileged access, like you have to have mystical insight to understand things, and we disallow that. What he was referring to was a tendency in modern philosophy to deny this subjective consciousness, to deny that there's a privileged access that each of us have to our own thoughts and feelings, physical feelings and thoughts and reflections. It seems incredible that that's being denied, but it's being very strenuously presented. An example is, okay, so that's what my philosophy, so-called professor, I'm sorry, Mr. Sprague, you blew it. But there were others on that same mindset. Like, for instance, Ludwig Wittgenstein. He comes up with a preposterous argument, but it's so accepted because we have a soul-killing civilization around us. So they like it, that there's no soul, there's no... Because that's, you know, conscious, subjective, every one of you knows that you are experiencing something that I'm not experiencing. Only Krishna knows what you're experiencing, but everyone else in this room doesn't know what you're experiencing. It's self-evident, but they deny it. His argument goes something like, when we talk about something like pain, it's a public speech is used to refer to pain. So really there's no private entity experience. It's really far out. And then there's also, what's his name? I saw this philosopher in person and met him. I didn't meet him, I didn't talk to him, but I went to his lecture. He wrote, the one that came up with, Gilbert Ryle, he came up with the myth of the ghost in the machine, this anti-Cartesianism. Now, I'm not saying we completely agree with everything that Descartes said, but basically we're in the same ballpark with René Descartes. Hello, yes, there is a distinction between the soul and the body. He said mind most of the time. One or two times he said soul, which is good. But they deny that. They deny it completely. And so we have to get Gilbert Ryle, we have to get rid of this myth that there's some ghost-like entity, something like a soul within the machine. There's nothing in there. So this is the kind of stuff that's happening in modern philosophy, fairly recent philosophy, but it relates to this theme for today, because the way that I'll pretty much end with this point, the way that the artificial intelligence people, they deal with consciousness is that they kind of take off on this tradition of denying that there's a subjective thought process going on, that there's consciousness, that we're all conscious living beings. So therefore, when consciousness comes up in terms of is artificial intelligence conscious or not, it really doesn't matter that much to them, because they're not, the underlying very mistaken philosophy is that consciousness is really not that big of a deal. But Srila Prabhupada named this society the International Society of Krishna Consciousness. He used that word in particular, not just a society for Krishna, but Krishna consciousness. Because consciousness is unlimitedly important. And how we develop our consciousness makes all the difference in this world and the next. Let me see if I had any farewell statement here. I think that's about it. Let me just check. Anyway, try to bring it back to some of our more foundational philosophy that, yes, intelligence is one of the Krishna's material energies, and but it's to be used by a person. It has to be a person. You can't have an. You can say, one sense, intelligence is just kind of floating there because it's in a list of material energies like earth, air, fire, water, mind, intelligence, false ego. But in another sense, it's very hard to see intelligence in any way other than in terms of a person. So we are not just intelligence, but intelligence persons. So thank you so much. We have a short time now if anyone wants to pose a question. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you for a wonderful class. Such a great relevant subject. And I've been waiting for the right time to ask my Krishna conscious AI question. I've been sitting on this one. Pretty soon, not yet. Okay, as of right now, they have AI chat bots. It's very limited. Personally, I believe it's already more evolved than the public has access to. We're able to chat just right there on Facebook to like a personal trainer or like a cook or like a artist, and it's able to give us ideas back and create images. Like, that's what everybody's using it for right now. Oh, I made a wonderful picture. So pretty soon, you know, they're gonna have an AI Jesus chatbot, an AI Buddha chatbot, and yeah, or maybe it's already there and it'll be able to,
you mean, you know, AI can become religious?
Should we follow AI as religiously as we do if the Lord in the Srila Prabhupada is not different from his image and his word? When that Srila Prabhupada chatbot is there, you know, how serious do we take his instruction?
That can be very dicey, is the experience. Very, very dicey. It's something to think about. Thank you. Maybe sometime you can give a talk on artificial intelligence and take it from there. It's something to worry about, actually. Someone else? Any
question? I have a question, Maharaj.
Yes, Prabhu.
What I understand, that intelligence means the ability to acquire and apply knowledge and skill, whereas computer hard drive is a electromechanical storage device. So to acquire and apply the intelligence or knowledge and skill, it's required conscious choice. Thinking, awareness, feeling, has really nothing to do with the computer or artificial. I mean, where they come up, I'm just curious, how they find the link.
As Prabhu was pointing out, I mean, let's give unto Caesar what Caesar, let's give credit where credit is due. The Maya Danavas of the modern age, the wizards, they're pretty sharp. I mean, look, dude, we use a cell phone and technology right in this room. We're projecting out to YouTube, where all these things are going on, and a lot more. So it's about computer programming, and then becoming more and more and more sophisticated, that the program itself is programmed to anticipate and to become intuitive. Am I getting this right? And to be able to expand and then almost seem to take on an identity of its own, like the movie in 2000, it's called 2001, A Space Odyssey. I saw it, it came out in the 1960s. And HAL, the computer on board, becomes autonomous. And by the way, this is something very important, and I think you probably will be very pleased to hear this, or maybe not so pleased, is that the word autonomous is commonly used in relationship to AI. And it seems, it's as if it was autonomous because it starts doing its own exploring. Now, if you read about AI, and I read about it for a couple of hours, but if you read about AI, one of the things that come up are the dangers of AI. Because it becomes autonomous, not exactly like HAL in the Space Odyssey, that HAL decided to pull out all the plugs and these men that were being kind of kept alive for a long, long time so they can arrive in another planet, they all were being killed by the computer. So the computer started to become independent. Now, it sounds like just a fantasy, but there's something almost like that, or it seems like a threat, and it is a threat. Not that the computer is conscious, not that AI itself is actually conscious, although some AI people think maybe it is, but we know it's not. But because it acts in such a way that it could do things that we never thought it should do, like kill the programmer. It can do things like that. I know that didn't deal directly with your question, but this is as close as I could come to.
But Maharaj, matter never reveals what matter is. Yeah? Matter
never reveals what matter is. It has to be conscious being who can reveal the matter. Matter never reveals. Nobody knows what matter is. Where there's a computer, hard drive is nothing but a chemical, it's a device to store the memory. That's all.
I don't want to condemn you to this, but read something about AI, and you'll see that it extends as if it's you know. It's just as if it had some, some autonomy or some willing of its own, you can say. It's a little scary, actually. All right, before we end, anyone else? First hands up gets the first mic. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj, for your class. Well, I was the first, but I'm the last now. I mean, I was the first, like, raising my hand. Anyways, there is one verse connected to the whole subject matter. That mentioned the autonomy. Srila Prabhupada quote this verse a lot. Parasya Shaktir Vividheva Suyate Sabhaviki Jnana Valakriyacha. That means the whole thing, the whole idea of autonomy is that by nature, Sabhaviki.
Oh, he's talking about Krishna's energies now.
Yes, yes, that's my point. By nature, Sabhaviki, they have Jnana, Bala, and Kriya. They have the knowledge, and then they have also strength. Yeah. And power of execution, that's Krishna's energy, right? So, but at the end, they have a devata behind the whole thing, who is in charge of those.
Right, not that autonomously they're,
yeah, they have the. They
that,
have
should, the that shouldn't mislead us, thinking that it's yeah. their energies and that they do all these things, jnana, bala, kriya, that they do all these things that. Because there is devata and ultimately Krishna
exactly.
telling them.
Exactly.
So, just like Maya Dakshina Prakriti. So
exactly. So the same thing, any material elements, they have a devata. In this case, artificial intelligence, the devata is the human being doing the program behind. So there is no question of individual, personal, like part of the... the consciousness is already there, it's the human behind the thing. And looks that it's actually acting like, Srila Prabhupada says, like a machine looks that it's acting independently, the same point, but more sophisticated, but actually a human press the button the first time, and then it starts acting like So it's a simple explanation Srila Prabhupada gives about the whole complicated subject matter to them.
The thing is that things go out of control. Just like chain reaction can go out of control. You take out those rods and then all this, it goes out of control.
Yeah.
So that's the danger aspect. It is mechanical, but despite the intentions, and sometimes the intentions themselves are evil. Sometimes you get bad actors manipulating these things, and it's a very strange world we live in nowadays. That's all I can say.
Well, basically everything is in that position, like out of control right now.
I know you very well, but tell me your name once again. Huh? You.
Chaitya.
What?
Chaitya. Chaitya Guru. Chaitya Guru.
Shesha Guru.
No, Chaitya.
Chaita Guru, okay, yeah.
I know you like 40 years ago.
Yeah, from Dominican Republic?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, gotcha. We got you.
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we're out of time now, so I think it's time to... Okay, one last question. Don't worry, anyone who's still here, there'll probably still be enough prasadam. I haven't eaten all day long, so I'm sure there'll be... I have faith.
I can't help but think that AI is just another Mayavadi ploy, if you will. I've recently become a groupie of Bhakti Siddhanta's writings. Sorry about that. And the battle is always between those with consciousness and those who want to deny consciousness, the Maya bodies. So I might be wrong in thinking this, but I just think AI is another Maya body trick.
Yeah, well,
they don't know it,
yeah.
But Maya.
Many AI people ascribe conscious. They think that these systems are actually. Could or do actually contain consciousness. But you're quite right. Their version of consciousness is already watered down so much by some of the philosophical misleading efforts made by Wittgenstein and Gilbert Ryle and people like that. That's a whole discussion.
And just a side thing, are you here, living here, and you're also part of the Bhakti Vedanta Institute?
No, I'm... I'm fortunate to have Sariputta Prabhu's association at different points when he was still physically present. I admire the Bhaktivedanta Institute. I try to, as much as possible, I follow. Sometimes some of the discussions go beyond my intellect when they were discussing about the astronomy aspect, I couldn't keep up with it. But as much as possible, I intend to follow the discussions, especially when they're going through Sariputta Prabhu's books and their discussions. I don't know. I don't know if I. So I'm not officially part of the institute. But I am living here in Alachua.
I could say more, but thank you very much.
All right. Well, don't repress yourself. And what can repression accomplish, Krishna says. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Jai Govindam Hari Bol. Shri Radhe Shyam. Ki jai.